From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond District, kind of.
I'm from Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules.
I'm from Marina, California.
SF State, wherever that is.
Today on Cross Currents, we're talking about Asian American identity and mental health. First, how trauma can be passed down through generations.
Ever since I came to live with them in third grade, I'd sit by the couch and they would talk about all these stories of the war.
Then a multilingual glossary that opens up new spaces for conversation.
Transgender, chuyển đổi giới tính.
And a daughter comes out to her mom.
I just want you to know that I really love women and that I'm a lesbian. She goes, I am too.
We're full of surprises today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, we're looking at how relationships between generations can affect Asian American identity and mental health. Many Americans grow up with family members who've migrated to the U.S. after severe trauma. Poet Monica Sook is one of them.
My mother doesn't dwell in the past, so she smiles and shakes her head when I ask about her life during the Khmer Rouge regime.
That's Sook reading from an essay she wrote called On Fear, Fearlessness, and Intergenerational Trauma. That's what researchers call it when the effects of a significant negative experience are passed on to generations after.
Mom, what did you do? Did you have to work? She shrugs. Her eyes are soft, then perplexed by my eagerness to bear witness to her story.
In the Bay Area, younger Cambodian Americans with families who survived the genocidal Khmer Rouge in the 1970s are beginning to talk openly about this trauma and how to move past it. KLW's Geraldine Asu tells us more.
I'm with Philip Rama, a first-generation Cambodian American. We're in the kitchen of his childhood home in Susun City, where he now lives with his grandparents.
So this is soup. It has like, what do they call it? Mustard, green mustard, and some riblets.
The house is remarkably quiet.
It's good to see my grandparents and stay with my grandparents. But here, I'm staying in the living room. I don't have my own room. So that's the only downside.
But living with his grandparents is nothing new for Rama. They raised him and always told him stories.
I remember ever since I came to live with them in third grade, I'd sit by the couch and they would talk about all these stories of the war.
Ye, whose given name is Mao Ong Rama, and her husband Sivaram Rama, came to the U.S. in 1980. They're survivors of the Khmer Rouge, the genocidal dictatorship that ruled Cambodia in the 1970s.
This is NBC Nightly News with John Chancellor and David Brinkley.
When the Khmer Rouge marched victoriously into Phnom Penh, no one knew how they would rule Cambodia.
I have a nightmare every day.
That's Rama's grandfather, who he calls Da.
From 40 years, I still have a nightmare until now. Sweating in the morning and try no sleep until morning.
The Khmer Rouge came to power in 1975 after the violence of the Vietnam War led to a Cambodian civil war. Pol Pot, the Khmer Rouge's leader, marked his victory by declaring it year zero, a new beginning. At first, Da says people celebrated, believing that this was the beginning of a peaceful era. But soon after, the regime started evacuating cities, separating families, and corralling people into forced labor camps.
The country's borders were quickly sealed. In time, bits of information emerged, stories of terror and death.
They say like, if your dad do something wrong, you have to kill. If your mom do something wrong, then you have to kill. Why they do that? To wash the brain.
The regime was driven by visions of extreme nationalism and ethnic purity. People were openly beaten, tortured, starved, and killed. Da remembers one time when he saw a professor steal some corn to eat, even though he knew the regime would notice.
I said, oh man, when they saw and then that said, you'll be killed, you know. Anything stole, steal, I kill, you know.
So he asked the man, why did you steal?
Oh, adieu. He said adieu. Adieu in French is goodbye forever.
The Khmer Rouge stayed in power for 4 years. By the end of their regime, more than 2 million people were dead. That's about 25% of Cambodia's population at that time.
With the population that comes here as refugees, there are a lot of stories about loss.
Rumani Hong is a community health specialist who works with the Southeast Asian population in Oakland.
It's not normal that it is so prominent in your life, but then it becomes something that you just think is a part of your life.
Hong says while stories like Da's are painful to hear, hearing them is exactly what might help survivors and their descendants to heal.
For some people, it does help to talk about some of the things that we've gone through. There's something about actually hearing it out loud and the vulnerability that comes with it that, you know, folks want to listen to you.
But these memories are painful to share, so silence is often the default. And Hong says if elders stay silent, their children and grandchildren learn to do that too.
If you are seeing and learning how to not talk about things that are bothering you, then, you know, you'll start to kind of internalize those types of behaviors as well and thinking that that's okay.
A generation of people suppressing pain can lead to many different problems. A report published in 2013 found that Cambodian American youth had one of the highest arrest rates for Asian Pacific Islanders in Oakland. And in 2014, the U.S. Census reported that nearly a third of Cambodian Americans did not complete high school. But healing is possible, and it's happening in community, across generations, in lots of different ways.
I'm so Khmer, I eat bye with thanks to you. Let's go to it.
Rama, together with RJ Sin, Vannery Jim, and Rumani Hong, are Project Prolific, a performing arts group that explores the Khmer American identity. It's a Thursday evening, the workday's through, and they're sitting on the couch at Vannery and RJ's apartment, eating a late dinner and rehearsing ideas for their upcoming show.
I'm so Khmer, I.
I'm on the outside of this joke, but what I can see is a home amongst friends, a home of people who feel comfortable questioning, asking, remembering, and creating something new.
A lot of times we hear our grandparents, our parents that came as refugees, until this day, they often say, oh, you have to know your history, you have to preserve your culture, keep the culture alive. But more recently, I started thinking about, what does that mean? What does preserving your culture mean? What does keeping your culture alive mean?
These questions seem central, not just to first and second generations of Cambodian Americans, but to older generations as well. 40-plus years after the rise of the Khmer Rouge, what does it mean to be Cambodian in America today, to have survived, and to now be together? Every April, a Cambodian New Year festival takes place in Oakland. Traditionally, it's a time that marks the end of the harvest, before the rainy season comes, when people get together to celebrate. There's music and dance, and people are getting ready to play a traditional Khmer game, a kind of tug of war between the sexes. It's my first time here, and I see people across generations laughing, playing, and talking to each other. And as Hong says, this kind of intergenerational connection is a good way to start reconciling the past in order to help inform the future.
It's really trying to understand what our parents and our grandparents have gone through so that we can kind of situate ourselves and see where we stand in this world and why it is the way it is.
I'm reminded of writer Monica Sook when she asks, who can be fearless confronting the history of genocide? Here, together now,
people look fearless. For Cross Currents, I'm Geraldine Asu.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Finding the words to express ourselves can sometimes be tricky, but trying to find the words to describe our sexual identities in a second language where some words aren't fully translatable, well, that's even more challenging. Last summer, Asian Health Services, an Oakland-based community clinic, had an idea to create a glossary of LGBTQ terms translated to Burmese, Chinese, Vietnamese, and Korean. The guide was originally meant for doctors and translators, but it's proving useful in other ways, too. In this next piece, we'll hear from one of the glossary's creators and one of its users.
My name is Carrie Kay, and I am a family medicine doctor, and I work here at Asian Health Services. So the glossary started off because I was seeing some LGBT patients, and I would get to these words, and I wouldn't be, you know, we'd have to look it up each time. Even words like gay or lesbian, you know, in different languages, because we serve like 11, 12 languages here, it's, you know, almost each time I would say the word and I would wonder whether my translator was having a hard time.
Transgender, chuyển đổi giới tính.
My name is Lotus Dao and my Vietnamese name is Don Yu. I am a transgender man and I also identify as queer. So chuyển, the first word, means change, and then Yoi is what in English we might consider gender or sex, and thin is your attraction and your sexual orientation. It's difficult to translate because I think technically the translation is you're changing your sexuality and your gender, but for me, I don't think that's always has to be together. You have like straight transgender people, lesbian transgender people, like gay transgender people.
Alienation, Pei Jin Chen.
I think language is very important. I think it is particularly important in America and in a lot of Western European cultures. Whereas I think in the home, like my home, the sort of typical way of communication is very nonverbal. And for me as a second generation person, that can be very distressing because if I'm growing up and I'm like, but I'm a lesbian, damn it. And my, you know, and my mom's like, don't talk about it. Then I'll be like, why? So I think language is very important, especially in the context that I'm living right now.
Coming out. Coming out.
When I attempted to come out the first time in high school, I was actually going through social media and reading about how a lot of people were coming out to their parents. And a lot of these people tended to be non-Asian. And they would be like, I told my mom I was a lesbian. And either it was like, I got kicked out, or either it was like, they embraced me, you know. And so, but the motto of coming out was this sort of big declaration and this big verbal statement and kind of like a take it or leave it. And if there's like words that we don't know or words that I don't know how to have a conversation with my mother, then it is really complicated. And so for her response and my experience was that she was quiet and she started crying.
Family support.
But more recently, when my mother and I reconnected, she told me that the reason why she didn't say anything was because She was already experiencing herself racism, and she didn't call it that, but she was like, life is hard for people like us. She would say it like that, like people like us. And she realized that it would be twice as hard for me. It shows that there's so much unsaid, you know, when we can't have those conversations, or we can't even find a common language, then it just sort of sits there like still water, and then it gets all infested and full of mosquitoes.
Acceptance, deep south.
I can see the glossary to be a way to help young people communicate with their parents too. I think what we've worked hard with the glossary to do is to make sure the words aren't like colloquial terms or negative terms, but we've really tried to make sure that the words are, you know, respectful terms.
Mental health services, dịch vụ sức khỏe tâm thần.
I don't know if this is like actually how things are defined, but I see health as a part of wellness. And for me, how I measure my wellness is how aligned I am with being my whole self. And so that balance definitely includes the English and Vietnamese parts of me. I feel like a lot of the healing that I have to do in with my family is in Vietnamese. And so having the words for it is priceless.
That piece was produced by Geraldine Asu. Asian Health Services is the first community clinic to develop an LGBTQ glossary for healthcare use in 4 Asian languages. To learn more about their work and how to support the glossary, go to kalw.org, click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Christy Chung was one of the plaintiffs in Wu versus Lockyer. That's the lawsuit that overturned California's original ban on gay marriage. But of the many people Chung has opened up to about her orientation and desire to raise a family with another woman, no one has left her quite as speechless as her own mother.
It was like spring of my first year in college, and I had been thinking my mom was separating from my dad. So I went home, it was, I think, spring break or somewhere around there, maybe it was even more like closer to Mother's Day. And I went home just to spend some time with her, and we were sitting on her bed, and I just said, okay, Mom, I have to ask you something. And she said, oh, I have to ask you something too. And I said, okay, well, first let me tell you my news. And I said, so I just want you to know that I really love women and that I'm a lesbian. She goes, I am too. And Jerry, who I've been hanging out with, is my lover. And I'm like, oh my God, that's incredible. So our conversation was this mix of total excitement and that we could tell each other about it, and then her all of a sudden she got really sad. And she said, you know, well, I'm sad for you because I'm grown up and I've had this long life and I got to have kids and I got to get married and you're not going to have any of that. And I just looked at her like, really? Yeah, I am. So, generationally, she really felt like in order to have a family, you had to be with a man first, and then be, you could be with women. And I was just like, oh, mom, you have no idea. I'm going to have kids. What are you talking about? I'm just going to have them with a woman. Biologically, I did. I have two other stepchildren, and I'm with another woman. And so we have three children between us. You know, I want them to really be able to stand up for themselves. So I just really want them to grow up to feel like they can be whoever they are.
That piece was edited by KALW's Mitzi Mock and recorded inside the StoryCorps booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Ababa. Now it's time for My Mixtape, where we ask people from the Bay Area and beyond to share a song that's meaningful to them. Oakland resident Owen Lee chose this song about the importance of love in the struggle for social change by Descarte Naaman.
My name is Owen Lee. I live in Oakland, California. And the song I chose is The River Song by Descarte Naaman.
Do you know how freedom sounds?
I like it because it sort of forces me to step back for a second and really think about and look at why we struggle and why we act for change. The song focuses on sort of the relationships that we form when we try to make a better world together, and to think about the love that motivates us in our work. And it's important to be aware of those things so that we stay grounded and so we continue to feel inspired and really see the beauty in what we're doing.
Now we'd love to hear from you. What's a song that's special to you? Give us a call. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Tell us who you are, what your song is, and why it's special to you. And we may just play it on Cross Currents. Today's team includes Lila Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Audrey Dilling, Christine Sue, Meredith Hoddenott, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Eli Wertschafter, and Jordan Winters. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producers were Geraldine Asu and Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This is a blues harmonica being played by George Bisharat of Piedmont. He's a Palestinian-American professor emeritus at UC Hastings College of Law. Bisharat is also known as Big Harp George, and he'll be playing tunes from his new album at Biscuits and Blues in San Francisco Saturday night. The show starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Yeah, I've had to suffer, had a hard, hard way to go. Down and out when the ground was covered with snow. Well, I'd get so worried I would cry the whole night through. Yeah, I'd get so worried I would cry the whole night through. Thinking about my troubles and the hardships.